So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Mr. O.
Hello, Miss H.
How are you today?
I didn't have to work today, so it's
so
a good day.
So better than me?
So better than you. Yes, but yeah. You're coming back all nice and refreshed from very hectic spring break that probably wasn't very refreshing at all, actually.
No, I ended up working majority of spring break. I had maybe like a couple things that I got to do for me, but... Yeah. And then my old district has their spring break next week. And so I'm just like, oh, man, I don't know. I kind of wish spring break was still something to look forward to at this point.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, now it's just like early spring break means it's a long stretch to get to the end of the school year.
Yeah. OK, well, let's start off with a couple that kind of seems spring break-ish because they're actually going somewhere, and that's Emily and Kobe. So Emily, Kobe, and the kids are traveling to Cameroon without too much incident. They are greeted outside the airport by Kobe's best friend, Valerie. It's been 2.5 years since they have seen each other. Emily is high energy and said she's ready to party. Valerie tells us how Kobe met a white lady and she was almost immediately pregnant. And so when he heard from Kobe, he was just shocked. Valerie worries that Kobe will struggle with Emily because, according to Valerie, based on movies he's seen, his impression of white women are they are bossy and arrogant, which I don't want to say that applies to all women, but Emily...
Well, yeah, they're definitely feeding into some of the lingering issues from last season, for sure.
Right. So they're going to their car, and at this point, it's Emily, Kobe, Valerie, the kids, and Emily's parents. And they have porters who help them with their luggage. There's a lot of porters, and they're all wondering, how are they all going to fit into these two vehicles? While they're standing around, Kobe seems to then be arguing with a few men, while Valerie then joins in the somewhat heated discussion. Emily keeps trying to figure out what's going on while everyone just kind of ignores her. And then Valerie is saying that it's not war, as then the family gets in the car. Kobe then tells everyone that the men just wanted to hustle and panhandle for money since they were aware that there were clearly foreigners in the group. Kobe offered them something, and then I guess, according to custom, they just had to accept that and leave after that. Lisa, Emily's mom, is now scared, so she tells Kobe that he is their bodyguard. Kobe compares this whole experience to his experience in the U.S. where everyone stared at them and he stood out. The next morning, everyone seems well-rested and they are on their way to see Kobe's parents. He's excited to see his family again. Kobe points out a man with clothes on his head, and Lisa is, on the other hand, noticing all the shacks. Emily was expecting a lot more animals, kind of like the savannah and the Lion King.
Oh, my God.
Where she thought. Okay. Anyways, they're going to go shopping for Cameroonian outfits because it's tradition for families to wear matching colors. Kobe hopes the gesture will make his family happy. Kobe helps to pick out outfits that blend together the regions of his family. Kobe assures Lisa that wearing the outfits isn't appropriating any culture. Emily loves the bright colors and patterns and feels happy embracing the culture. Emily, however, does feel somewhat disingenuous showing up to Kobe's family's place dressed in traditional clothes, but then not knowing anything about their culture. She worries that she won't be accepted and the family will hate her, especially for having Kobe move away. All right. So what do you think about this whole, like, I thought it was actually very nice, or I guess aware, that Lisa considered like misappropriating.
Well, I think it's funny that Lisa was thinking about, you know, is this cultural appropriation? Is this right. an appropriate thing for us to wear? Whereas Dad was just like yelling Wakanda over and over again.
I know. Oh gosh, Dad, you're so embarrassing.
So embarrassing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's one of those things where at that point you have to trust the person who's from that culture, right? Yeah. To know what culturally appropriate things are, right? Like, is it going to be like, you know, people dressing up with a, you know, Native American headdress on Halloween? You're like, maybe let's pump the brakes on that.
Right.
Or is it more like, when you was a kid, you would go to somebody's bar mitzvah, you'd have to wear a yarmulke when you were in the synagogue, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah.
That's not cultural appropriation. That's like the known thing that you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's, you know, it you have to trust the person whose culture it is, mm-hmm. but one of those. But I guess the question I have is, you know, we're trusting Kobe to be the arbiter of all culture here as his role. But Emily kept saying, well, I don't know anything about Cameroon. I don't know anything about Cameroonian culture.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why not?
Right. I mean, you've lived with this man for like, what, 2-3 years now? You would think that you would know something, or at least get a crash course before you leave.
Yeah. Right. Like, what are the major cities? What are the sports teams that you like? Like, even like what kind of languages? What stores do you have? Like, even like nuts and bolts stuff besides mm-hmm. like, what are your major holidays? Like, when does the family all get together?
Right.
Like, how do weddings usually work there? Like, that just seems like stuff that if I was engaged to and married to someone from like a different culture, I feel like I'd never get enough of hearing about that. I'd be like, tell me more.
I want to know more. It doesn't surprise me all that much, though, because Emily very much comes off as someone who's a little self-centered.
Sure.
So I just don't think of her as thinking of others like that unless it truly affects her. And now she's in Cameroon, it truly affects her. So now she's thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking in my head, it's like my current partner's from supports my ex-wife. She was from upstate New York, right? Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And we talk about like how Syracuse, New York, upstate New York very differs from Maryland all the time, right? In terms of that stuff. So I don't know how it just doesn't come up in conversation.
Well, okay. To be fair, your partner, I feel like, talks about that quite a bit as well, right? And maybe Kobe
sure.
doesn't offer up that information the same way, right? But I think that kind of goes back to, like, Emily definitely seems like she dominates a lot of the conversations, steers
right.
what they talk
sure.
about, you know? And so it's, like, kind of about her a lot of the times. So at least
yeah,
that's what it
that.
Appears based on what
yeah.
we've seen.
Yeah, but I guess part of me is just like, you're living in mom and dad's basement doing nothing for 2 years. What the hell else are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
Like, all this time, it's got to come up. But I mean, I think at the end, like, Emily, I thought, looked fantastic in that outfit, in the outfit she had out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think she looked great.
I think she's looking pretty good just in general.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was – oh, and like, my God, those freaking – panhandlers at the beginning were giving
oh,
me
yeah.
such like we have people like that in Baltimore, and like they come out and it can be very scary because
yeah.
it's not like it's just one or two people come out and they're like needy and like blah blah blah. It's like, no, they come out and surround you
yeah.
and like intimidate you into giving them money. And then of course ours doesn't go like Kobe, like he's like, oh well, I offered them something, they had to accept it.
Right.
For us, if you offer them something, they're like, you can do better than that.
Yeah. They're like, what else do you have?
What else do you have? Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of scary. I was like, I was very confused what was happening until he explained it. And it's like, and there goes Emily, like trying to get in the middle of it. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
just like,
that seems, I kind of thought about it when they were like, look at all these porters. And I was like, those porters are going to ask you for money when they're done. like in my head,
but
I was like,
the porters were in costume. Sorry, in uniform, right? Those other guys that
yeah.
were like, I was like, where did these guys come
yeah,
from?
I was like, where did these guys come from? How
yeah.
are they related to the porters? Is it is this like the porter pimp that's out there being like,
right.
well, you used my guys, so where's my
yeah.
money? You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. So hopefully that kind of stuff we don't need from the other countries.
Right.
All right. So let's move on. Next people, let's talk about the new people we saw this week, or at least new to this season,
right.
Definitely not new, is Ed and Liz.
Oh, gosh.
So we start our season with Ed, and he's on a riding mower with a cowboy hat on that he gets and starts mowing his lawn, and Liz is like, I told you not to buy that. And he was like, yeah, I borrowed it from my brother. So he's on this big riding mower, right? So we're reintroduced to Ed, who's 58, and Liz, who is 31. I forget how young she is all the time and how big this age gap is. And they're from San Diego, we'll see how that goes. And we start up with Ed, like literally when they introduce each other, Ed's first move is to be like, make a trolley joke about like sex, like in the interview. It's like, oh my God. So anyway, he's mowing the lawn with his brother's mower because now they live in Ed's hometown of Bentonville, Arkansas, where they're just keeping track of all the weird country phrases people use and they find entertaining. So Liz says that she's living the dream in Arkansas because she's got a big house. Her daughter Riley is staying with them for the summer, and they finally set a wedding date 2 months from now. So if you thought 90 days wasn't enough time, now we have 60 days. So then they go through a lot of background from their time on where they were on two seasons of A Single Life. They were on last season of Happily Ever After. And most recently, they were on Last Resort, which I didn't even watch. So we'll see how that goes.
It was so, just as awful as you would think, because, I mean, you're like basically combining Angela and Ed face-to-face for an entire season.
Whatever it was, whichever therapist they had for Last Resort need to – I guess – Sharp wants to keep them, but please don't hire them for your own relationship because neither of those relationships still exist after going through intensive therapy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, Ed says that the therapy they went through there has made him, inspired him to make changes and has really saved their relationship. So they both think that things are on solider ground, especially considering they described the previous stage of their relationship as a hurricane. So later on, Riley joins them both to sit down and make some bead bracelets. And while they're doing that, they ask her about the upcoming wedding. So Riley's okay with Ed being her stepdad, but seems more excited for her family to come in for the wedding. So Liz says she's putting a whole lot of faith in Ed being able to turn from basically uncle mode into dad mode, because that's his vibe with Riley right now, is he's in uncle mode. So in a private interview, he tells us that he's getting pretty worried about some things. You know, he's putting on a good face for Liz, but, you know, between the wedding and Riley and Liz, things are getting pretty stressful. And when things are stressful, they argue. So it's hard to commit. He says it's hard to commit to someone for the rest of your life. And they both know how hard that can be because they have 3 divorces between them.
Oh, gosh.
So one thing that they didn't mention at the top, though, we can get to the next scene of them, is that neither of them have jobs right now.
God.
So they've just been living off their savings. So Liz had to give up her partnership in the restaurant in San Diego to move here. And their plan here is to become realtors, which I 100% know he's going to put that stupid face that he has tattooed on his leg on the cards and be like, Big Ed and Liz Realty. So he figures it's worth, we're going to work because it's a word of mouth business. And, you know, they can go big into advertising, not in the least by being on a nationally televised show. But anyway, we see them like dressed up like as if they're going to meet a client for a house, but it's just role play. It's Riley who comes in to playing the part of the interested home buyer. So they go inside and Ed does his whole HGTV spiel about and talks. And then also, you know, in the interviews talks about how like big of a life change it is that he's now, you know, if he said, if you would have told me a year ago that I'd be an engaged real estate agent living in Arkansas. So after the fake tour, Riley says that, you know, during the tour, Liz should have done more of the talking. And they ask, well, do you think we'll be able to get along working together? And she's like, sometimes.
Mm.
So, and that reminds us of that weird time they did try to work together where they were in a photo shoot. And she criticized Ed's pictures. And they had a big fight, right? But this time, it's not like Ed's supposed to be teaching or being the boss. They're going to be equal partners. And they really won't. They kind of have designated roles, right? Ed's going to handle most of the client-facing things and the being jokey, and Liz is going to handle the paperwork and being serious. So it's important that all this work out because, as Ed tells us, without Liz around, right now they're underwater and they really need some income to pay for this wedding that they're trying to put on. All right. So, I mean, is there a I feel like real estate is like the trendiest thing to be going into right now. I don't know if that's the best plan.
Yeah. What I find interesting about it is I feel like it's a job that seems accessible to a lot of people, right?
I just go and take a test and I can do it. Yeah.
Like a very high earning potential for, you know, kind of passing a couple of exams. And not to say that I'm not trying to belittle or say that it's like not for nothing, but I think the earning potential for, let's say, the lack of like a formal education and the lack of like years of experience, right? I think mm-hmm. that entices a lot of people to get into the industry. What I find also very interesting is the very recent lawsuit, which then resulted as the getting rid of the standard commissions. And they're kind of speculating right now that they think a lot of people, a lot of realtors will end up leaving the industry because of the impact that the lack of like a set commission will have. And I mean, and these are just, you know, projections at this point. It's to be seen what happens. But I do find it interesting. My partner's two of his most recent exes were kind of like just, you know, housewife types. They haven't worked in forever, if at all, ever. And I find it very interesting. And I think it's kind of telling that they both are trying to be real estate agents right now. And that kind of goes back to the like, you don't have to have a lot of experience. You don't have to have a lot of education. Do you have to do something? Sure. And I'm not saying by any means that this is an easy job, but I kind of think it fits that high earning potential for kind of a low effort startup, I guess.
Yeah, I think what it is that at the end of the day, it's a place where agencies can hire because it doesn't cost them anything to do so, right? If you, they're not paying you a salary anyway. So if you sell the house, sell the house. If you don't, you don't, right? And if you, and to get the license and go out there and try to open your own real estate business is, once you have a license, there's not a lot of overhead for it, right? You don't have to have office space. You can meet people at their, the houses and stuff. But what I know about it is, you know, I knew somebody who's been, well, it's the realtor we always use. My whole family always uses him because he's a good guy. He does what he wants. That man works harder than anybody I've ever met. And he always complains about it. He's like, you can make money at this. Like he's kind of like, he wouldn't see pretty much anybody, but you have to work. And he's like, and everybody who comes in here doesn't make money. They think they're going to come in there and just walk in on Saturday, show somebody a house, and then get a five figure check from their commission. Right. And not the way it works.
That is like, definitely the impression I get, you know, like if you want to be successful out of it, you have to work hard. And I feel like people are very much like attracted to this like potential of a high income without kind of realizing there's a lot of work involved, a lot of having to juggle a lot of, you know, balls because, you know, it's like you don't know if an offer is going to fall through or not. So you have to be, you know, out there hustling. There is no end to it.
However many clients you're currently working with, you're on call with all of those people all the time. You're not getting any. There's no weekends off. Weekends are when you work.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's when you work the hardest because that's when people are off to see houses and stuff.
Right.
That's when the open houses are. And that's – but I think people – and I don't think it's not for nothing. I think I mentioned it. HGTV is a huge part of that, right? People watch HGTV. They see the real estate agents that are not really real estate agents, but television personalities.
Yeah.
And they just kind of go in and show the couple three houses and the couple picks one of them and it's done. And there's no arguing and bargaining and stuff like that. And it's like, man, if that's how it worked, I would do that. That's a lot of money for that little amount of work.
Right. And I can kind of see just based on what we know of Ed and Liz – like I could see them being enticed by that earning potential without like actually wanting to work because I mean, let's be real here. I feel like Ed is pretty awful person, but I think he plays up his awfulness to stay on this show because he doesn't want to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that I'd say the same thing about Liz. I think that's going to be part of the tension because she was running a restaurant. Like that's work too. Like that's lot of work, right? So I'm sure she worked her ass off at that restaurant, but I do think Ed wants to – oh, I just want to take pictures. Like, he wants to make big money for with minimal amount of work. Yeah. And so I think it's going to be part of the tension is Liz is going to be push, 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 push because we need to keep doing this. And he's just going to be like, well, I just want to crack a couple jokes and show him the house and blah, blah, blah. And she's – and that could be it because, yeah, he just wants to put his stupid face cartoon on stuff and have that be that. So,
yeah. All right, let's move on to another couple, Nicole and Mahmood. So it's been 6 months since Nicole has seen Mahmood, and she's never seen him in the U.S., so she's really excited. She immediately smiles and runs to him when she sees him at the airport and tells him to kiss her, and then for some reason calls him a motherfucker. He likes her sign, but seems very low energy because he's tired from the travel. She notices that Mahmood doesn't want to kiss her on the lips, but he's still uncomfortable because he's Muslim. As he walks away, Mahmood asks her to cover her stomach as she laughs and tells him not to ruin a nice moment. Nicole says that nobody cares here, so it's okay. Mahmood tries to cross the street just randomly, but Nicole tells him he can't just do that here and he has to cross at a crosswalk. Nicole says crossing the street in Egypt is actually kind of scary. Nicole wants him to be safe and follow the rules in the U.S. She then, when they get in the car, tells him to wear his seatbelt or he'll get in trouble with the police. Mahmood seems to be pretty judgmental of her driving. He says that the downtown looks nice, but Egypt is better. He notes that it's quiet and you can't actually see any people. You just see cars, and it just feels all very weird to him. He calls her neighborhood nice, even though he generally seems pretty disinterested at this point. Nicole knows how exhausting the travel can be, so she's just hoping that this is just a mood and that he will have an open mind about liking it in the U.S. Nicole is excited about showing him everything as he looks around her place. He notes all the pillows and wonders why they have to deal with all these pillows every day, on and off the bed, you know, just to sleep. He thinks it's weird. He then also notes all the nudity in the house, and he says he doesn't like her nude painting, which, to be fair, like,
it was pretty aggressive.
The face was creepy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think that's what bothered him. It was a creepy picture.
The big bush
but like,
is what bothered him. Yes. Like, they tried to blur it out, but it was very obvious that there was
very obviously a big old bush. Yes.
Yeah, big old bush. I think that made him uncomfortable. Nicole said she made it in art school and she doesn't actually care what he thinks of it. He also notes her nude mannequin, and Nicole says it's just a doll and, you know, it's actually clothed when she's trying to sell stuff. And Mahmood says it's just all very weird. Nicole says these naked things have lived there before he did, so they're going to stay. Nicole gives Mahmood the gift of pajamas, which really just look like a pair of boxer shorts. Mm-hmm. Mahmood says it's nice, but also weird. He says that he will do his best to make her happy. Mahmood is falling asleep at the table, and Nicole says that she wishes he got more sleep on the plane. And Mahmood then says he will listen to her in the future as she's kind of annoyed. She warned him about travel exhaustion and told him to sleep on the plane. Nicole is hoping that he will put in his very best effort because she says that this is the last chance because she refuses to move back to Egypt. Okay, so I thought that Nicole, even though she's, I don't know, do you think she was trying to make a point by having all these things around him? You know, having the naked pictures, you know, having her, you know, midriff showing, like all these things that she kind of knows are going to set him off. Is she trying to test him or?
Yeah, I thought it was weird. Like it was like almost it felt to me like she was trying to get revenge. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel like when I got to Egypt, I got the most extreme version of Egypt that you knew was going to piss me off and I knew wasn't comfortable with. So I'm going to do the same thing to you. I'm going to give you the most American. Here's my naked mannequin. Here's the naked lady I drew when I was in thing. Here's my midriff. And the first thing I'm going to try to do is kiss you on the mouth. Like,
yeah.
Which means that like she's more interested in the push and pull and who's getting their way than any kind of compromise. Like there was no compromise at all.
Right.
With any of the things she was doing. Perhaps only marrying something that barely showed her midriff instead of just coming in like a halter top and like Daisy Dukes. I don't know what else she would have done. Not that she would have done that because that's not her style. But
yes, I don't think it's her style either.
But like it definitely meant I don't think she was going to pick anything that didn't at least show a little stomach.
Yeah.
Right. And it was very concerning, the amount of almost seems like trolling she was doing at him.
Yes, I definitely got that impression too, because you're going to kick off this visit by calling him a motherfucker. Like, why? What is the point of that? That is clearly not what you call him as an she calls him honey, right? She always both call each other honey. So yes. It's like, you know, why would you come out the gate, motherfucker? Like, that's offensive for one. And he, if it's not intended to be offensive, he's not getting the joke.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely was her. The best interpretation was her being like, I want to immediately show you all the stuff that we can do in America that we couldn't do in Egypt, right? And part of that, her issue there is like when she said that, she was like, you can kiss me. Nobody here cares. Yeah. But the problem was somebody there did care.
Yes, he
and
did.
It was him, right? And so like – and I guess she doesn't understand that when he was saying this isn't what we do in the Muslim country or this isn't what we do as Muslims, he means him. He doesn't mean – he means he's uncomfortable with doing that. He doesn't want to do that. Not that he's uncomfortable with other people seeing him do that, right? And and he's just kowtowing to all the pressure from the other people. He honestly feels this stuff internally.
Right. And I think also it's just like a shock to him, right, to kind of get dropped in the middle of it. And there's probably some element of like, oh, my gosh. And like your immediate thought is this is wrong. So, like, I mean, I kind of had a very, very small scale similar experience. I went to a private school and they were very strict about like we didn't have to wear uniforms or anything like that. But like how short your shorts or skirts were. Sure. And, you know, like you couldn't have any spaghetti straps at all, you know, and then also like just PDA, you weren't allowed to hold hands with anyone. Like that's like completely forbidden, right? Then I went to public school. People are like making out, wearing like short shorts and like got bra straps showing and stuff. And it, you know, it's one of those things where I knew that these people weren't breaking the rules, but it was still a shock for me to witness that, because it's like you've been told all this time that that's against the rules. And so it's like took like a bit of an adjustment, like, oh, you get this like tense feeling like they're doing something wrong, but really they're not doing anything wrong.
I mean, they need to stop making out and go to class, but that's that's because they need to be in class, not because like you can't be kissing your boyfriend, right?
It is.
And like the part of me that really that she lost, the part where she lost me completely, right, is the part where she was just like, I know I feel like you're tired, but God damn it, I told you to sleep on the plane.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know who tells me to sleep on the plane all the time? Me. You know who still can't sleep on the motherfucking plane?
Right.
Me. Like, like it doesn't matter how much you try to sleep. You can't – I cannot sleep on a plane. And I might get like 15, 20 minutes on like a 8-hour flight, but that's going to be it. I'll be there trying to rest, but I didn't get any sleep and I still get there tired. And I can recover from it pretty quickly, but like – you can't just be like, well, I told you you should have done this. Well, I tried. It didn't work.
Yeah. It's just really interesting. Like, I do find their story to be interesting because we've seen two extremes, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like he has remained the same person, essentially.
For sure.
You know, from last season, this season. But the Nicole we've seen from the previous season from now, it's like she knows she holds a little bit more power. And so the side of her we've seen has been like blatant, rebellious, and, how they're going to stay together.
Since she's kind of at the place where I'm like, I am under no circumstances going back to Egypt.
Yeah.
Right. Now the force of making this relationship work is all on him.
Yeah.
Can he come to America and can he make it work? And does he want to be in America and does he want to make it work? And she's kind of like, she's got – so she feels like she has the power in the relationship now, whereas when they were in Egypt, he had the power. And she wasn't comfortable with that. And again, I feel like she's trying to get even.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So speaking of let's go power relationship, power dynamics, and talk about Sophie and Rob. Mm. So we kind of – just we have them leaving the selfie gallery where they had their last argument from the last episode together – apart. I'm sorry, separately. And Rob's going back to his house. And we start with Rob's side of the story. You know, he's telling producers what he thinks. And he's like, well, I'm the one who cares about this marriage. I care about the sanctity of marriage. I care about making it work. I think Sophie should have come home with me. And you know I don't agree with Rob just the way I'm making his voice.
No, of course.
She should be at home working with the problems instead of like being separate and tearing this whole marriage apart. Right. Then we switch over to Sophie, who correctly assesses that she's like, I think Rob is probably kind of pretty upset it didn't come home with him. But she's not going. She says, I'm not going to be pressured to go back. And if and when I do go back, it's going to be on my own terms. I'm not just going to go to accept the way all the ways I was treated before that led me to leaving. So she feels like the meeting was kind of setting up false hope again. Like she every time they meet together and every time they get together, she has this idea that he's going to be the person she thought he was before she got to the States. And then every time she shows up, he's the person that he actually is. Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, Rob gets home to all of his tarantulas and then he opens a whole ass dresser drawer, which just on the bottom in the middle of it has her wedding ring. It's so weird. And so he holds the ring and like thinks out loud about like, well, if you don't even keep track of where your wedding band is, you must not care about the marriage at all. So then we later on, Sophie meets her mom at a bookstore. Which is confusing to Sophie because she's like, I've never seen my mom read a book, so I don't know why she wants to go here. So Claire is feeling pretty good because her boyfriend dropped, the way she says it, the L word, which is nice, but Sophie's relationship is kind of going the other way. So they get to talking about what happened when she and Rob met, and Claire pretty much is like, guesses how everything went down. Like, oh, he just wanted to blame you and argue about it, right? Yeah. He wanted you to come back and not change anything. Yeah. Yeah. So Sophie says it was nice to see him at first, but then the argument started. Once they start arguing in circles, and then nothing gets accomplished and it's done. Sophie says, though, now, what's next? Now she's going to have another chat with him. She agreed. He texted her again and, you know, got in there to get her to agree to come talk at the house. We'll see how that goes. So she's pretty sure that he just wants to kind of talk about her moving back in, which seems pretty pointless to her because things are not getting better. But maybe they could, she says. Maybe they'll change. And Claire's like, no. And he's like, but he could. She's like, no. And she, like very lots of Sophie just being like, but there is a small chance. And Claire's like, no, he will not. No. So it's basically – seems to me it's both Rob and Sophie having a competition where they don't want to be the one that gave up on the relationship. And so every time anybody asks, they'll try. So Claire says things won't change until Rob wants to change. And he's not going to want to change because he doesn't think he's the problem. He thinks Sophie is the problem. So and of course, that's despite all the online cheating that Claire brings up to Sophie right now. So Claire has this theory that him doing the online cheating multiple times sounds like addiction to her. And she knows a thing or two about addiction because she was, you know, not clean when she was raising Sophie. So Sophie wants to give him the benefit of the doubt, though, because things are different than Claire and her boyfriend because they're married and everything. So I guess I'm going to go back very, very, very close to the beginning. Right. Rob was like, you know, I'm the one who wants to work on this. Why doesn't she want to come back and work on it? We can just work on it. What does working on it look like to him?
I don't know what he thinks. I think, okay, this is what I think he thinks. Working on it is her, 100% her forgiving him, working on her forgiveness of him, right? Because I think like really what the problem is that she has not forgiven or forgotten all of these, you know, deviances, dalliances, you know, of talking with other women. And that is what the problem is. And she wants trust, which I think is really difficult because he's broken trust. And so it's like, yeah, sure, you can try to move on, but how is Rob going to earn his trust other than just be trustworthy and time? But it's really Sophie who has to do the work of being able to trust him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, mine was a little less generous. I thought his idea of working on it was working on it means we were in the same place. We have the same exhausting conversation and over and over again without changing anything until you just give up and do what I want. And then we've worked on it and our problems are solved.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely not wrong. Whatever it is, he doesn't think that he has to do any of it.
No, right? And it's like, it's super frustrating to listen to him because he doesn't come up with a, he doesn't even come up with a way. It's like, all right, well, I feel like you're not catching what, you're not getting what I'm saying. So let me think of another way to explain it to him. He just says literally the same words over and over again. They have the same exact conversation, word for word, back and forth, numerous times in a row. And he's like, that's working on it. And it's like, that's not working on anything. That's just pounding your head against a brick wall that you're not getting through that wall. Like, I don't understand what I at that time, we see this from a lot of couples. A lot of couples are like, well, we just need to work on it. And I was like, I need you to do better, like, descriptive language about what you mean by working on it. I want nuts and bolts. What does working on it mean besides – yeah, right. The other person changing to do what I want.
Right, right. Yeah, he's incredibly frustrating. I mean, do you see them continuing on based on what we've seen?
And I understand kind of his perspective. If we're not sure exactly how things went down, but if she went back through his message, did that factory reset thing, right? Mm-hmm. I could see being very frustrated about, like, I didn't do anything new. And you're all upset about this thing and saying you can't trust me now, despite the fact that I didn't actually do anything new to break your trust. Yeah. Right. But unfortunately, that's not his decision to make. She gets to be the one who decides how she feels about that. And he gets to be the one that waits for that decision. Like, and that's all he can do is wait. And I feel like, I don't know if he's, I want to say he's making it worse, right? By like, keeping engaging her in this repetitive conversation. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that he is, because I think he's going to get what he wants. And I don't think they work out long term, but I think she ends up moving back in before they break up for good.
Yeah. I mean, but I can see that, right? You got to like do one last ditch effort, and her moving in just seems kind of be the last ditch effort, you know, mm-hmm. either going to make it or break it. I don't think they're strong enough to make it, so.
But I think she's going to do that same, but at the end of the day, you know, I love him, so I think it's worth it to move back, and it's going to be so frustrating. Like, I'm already, like, bracing for it. It's going to be awful.
Right. Okay, let's move on to our last couple that we saw this week.
Your last couple.
Last couple. Oh, sorry. Well, there was a lot going on with them, too. That was Gino and Jasmine. So Gino and Jasmine are living that Michigan camping life, which means a lot of banjo music. They tuck into the tent for the night.
Not a Michigan thing. That's a Southern thing.
I know.
God. Yeah.
And Jasmine says that this is their honeymoon, so no inhibitions, which means massaging Gino's feet and licking and sucking his toes. And it was just so disgusting.
It was worse because we've seen it in the preview, and I didn't realize she just took off his sweaty, stinky, end-of-the-day sock and just went after it.
So she doesn't even seem to mind that Gino can't even confirm that his feet are clean. So then Jasmine then tells us a ridiculous story about how she discovered she had a foot fetish after seeing Gino in his Jesus sandals, and she was just turned on. We get more footage of Jasmine sucking Gino's feet and saying it tastes like cheese, which, ew. Jasmine then asks if Gino wants a finger in his ass as she playfully slaps his face. So they're just trying to show us that things getting wild there.
Oh, they're freaky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, Jasmine is making out with Coco the dog. She tells us that they had a lot of sex and Gino hopes that they made a baby. Gino enjoyed himself, but Jasmine is worried that she won't get pregnant immediately, which scares her because Gino definitely has baby fever. But maybe he doesn't want it that much because he seems to be really scared and shocked when Jasmine whips out this like physical fertility calendar marked with fish, which is supposed to indicate the amount of times they're supposed to have sex to increase their chances of getting pregnant. Gino says that he will definitely need to use his blue pills to have sex. Like,
he was just calculating how much he has to spend on blue pills for this to happen. Oh, gosh,
I know, right? to use his blue pills to have sex 12 times in 6 days. He says it's a bit much and wonders if she's just exaggerating, like this has to be the schedule. Gino just wants it to be natural and he doesn't want to be forced. He doesn't want to have to pay attention to calendars. But Jasmine points out it won't happen if they don't increase their chances. She then admits that it wasn't easy to conceive her son, JC, and she had to do hormonal treatment. She says that the fertility treatments and issues challenged her relationship with her ex. Jasmine is nearly in tears, saying that she had to get daily injections to prevent a miscarriage. Gino thinks it will happen naturally, and it will happen when she least expects it. Jasmine is relieved that Gino doesn't seem to be upset about the news. They pack up their stuff, and Jasmine says she never wants to come back. And now that their honeymoon is over, Jasmine is ready to focus on getting her kids to the U.S. She calls home and talks to her mom and sister Zuellen, who takes care of her kids when she is gone. Zuellen says that Wanse misses her and he has been sad but doesn't want to tell her. Zuellen thinks that leaving it up to Gino has been a mistake, and Jasmine says that Gino better keep his promise and Jasmine will not stay in the U.S. without her kids. Jasmine's mom says that she's always in pain and she has to get some tests done. And Jasmine is worried about her mom's health because they just don't seem to have any answers. Zuellen says that her mom's tests are about $800 and they just can't afford it. Jasmine is worried that her mom's pain is cancer and she wants Gino to help pay the medical bills. Jasmine sobs, worrying about something being seriously wrong with her mom, and she isn't there. Zuellen tells her to relax and not to worry about all the bad things that could happen. Jasmine feels like she's being a crappy mom and a crappy daughter. She gives Zuellen, jokingly, a hard time for wearing her shirt, but says she loves and misses her more. Jasmine and Gino then are meeting with an immigration lawyer to ask about her kid's visa process and what the status of her green card is. Gino refused to hire a lawyer before, and we even saw this on one of their many seasons, to get Jasmine there faster. So he doesn't want to actually hire an immigration lawyer now because he claims he did a very good job. Gino doesn't have the money to pay for a lawyer because they are in debt after the wedding. So he is insistent that this is a consultation only. They meet with Anthony, the immigration lawyer. Gino tells the lawyer that he's a semi-expert at all of this. Mm-hmm. Anthony tells Jasmine that she will be allowed to leave the country in about 8 to 12 months. He says that with professional help, they could potentially expedite the process. Jasmine admits to Anthony that she didn't want to bring the kids over until she determined that Michigan was stable and her relationship was stable. Anthony asks Gino if he included the kids on the K-1 visa, and he then says he didn't and wanted to know if he could change it on the adjustment status. Anthony really wants to, like, drive home the point that he should have hired a lawyer. So he asks, what advice did Google offer Gino?
Yeah.
He then proceeds to tell Gino and Jasmine that because Gino didn't include the kids on his original K-1, that they can't bring the children over so easily. Jasmine gives Gino a death stare as the lawyer tells us that Gino messed up and that's the reason why you should hire an immigration lawyer in the first place. It will cost about $5,000 for filing fees to now get the kids over, and it could be 18 months to 2 years before it gets approved. Jasmine starts crying, asking how she will tell her kids that it will take 2 years. Jasmine had no idea it would take that long, and now she is regretting coming there without her kids. All right, so I don't know. I mean, it's all hindsight, right? But Gino, should he have been this arrogant and cocky about his ability to do paperwork?
Evidently not. Like, we've definitely seen the end result of it is that he didn't do everything he could have. So there we go. Like, that's pretty much said and done. If assuming this lawyer, like, is giving us the truth here. Yeah, like, that man was trolling that Google didn't answer that for you, did it?
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, you. I mean, I kind of give it to him. He's like, I went to a lot of debt and a lot of law school to learn all this stuff.
Right.
And you try to do it over a weekend. So, right. Yeah, there you go. But like obviously not, oh my God, his face when the lawyer was explaining this and he was just like,
like, oh yeah, the Gino, my bad, yeah. Look.
Yeah, the Gino, I made a terrible mistake. Look, was pretty strong on this one. But I mean, at the end of the day, it wasn't necessarily his doing it wrong that made it kind that I don't know that made it bad. It was his supreme confidence that like nobody right. could have done this better. I did this fantastic job. Every time she mentioned that, you know, every time she suggested he get help or suggested that maybe something was wrong on him at his end, he was like, absolutely not. I did a great job. I did everything I was supposed to. Like, angrily. He got angry at her a few times for suggesting that maybe it was something from the paperwork.
Yeah.
Right? Him just being, I did everything I needed to do. And it's like, well, clearly you didn't know what you were, at the end of the day, you didn't fully know what you were doing.
Yeah. Right? And I mean, and that's fair because, I mean, he claims to be an expert because his ex-wife came over on a K-1 visa. Well, that's great. Did his ex-wife have kids? No. So obviously it's a different process. And so he really should have researched it.
But well, it's also a different process because it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, like, that's things true. Change. Yes. And we've talked about that as well. Like, but I just, you know, it's just so frustrating because it's like, it to me, it just comes off like the kids are not a priority at all for him.
Absolutely not. And the telling for me is a red flag is kind of something he said kind of offhanded before they went to the lawyer's office and he was worried about how much it was going to cost. He was like, we're in debt from the wedding. You know, we're trying to get pregnant and, you know, we're going to add this cost on top of it. So to me, when I heard that, I heard somebody who was like, my kid is important. My unborn child is more important than your kids that are living in Panama. Like, that is a kid who is going to treat his kid better than your kids.
I had the exact same thought when I heard him say that because he was prioritizing her being pregnant and thinking about the cost of her being pregnant having a kid. And he's like, well, we don't have the money because we're trying to get pregnant. It's like, oh, yes, the kid that doesn't exist yet or the kids that already exist. I definitely got that impression, which was just disgusting to me. Like, I don't know why he doesn't think of them as a package deal. And I don't know, maybe that's a little bit of Jasmine's fault too, because it's like, I don't know if this is just how she is in general or if this is just her trying to protect her kids on the show, but she does not scream mom energy. I feel like we didn't even hear about her kids or really anything about her kids much until like the second or third time we saw them on this show.
Right. And she's been like, to be fair, I mean, I don't know, but you're right. It seems like she's been prioritizing a bunch of stuff over her kids as well.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I mean, it wouldn't have been unreasonable for her to just be like, I'm not coming to America until my kids can come too.
Right.
Not happening.
Yeah.
Right. You want me to get to America, figure out how to bring my kids with me. Right. And even putting it all in his hand. Right.
Yeah.
Because I think she's like, and then she ended up trusting him being like, well, we'll get him over as soon as you get here. Right.
Right.
And now he's going back on that. Like it's pretty disgusting how quickly he's going back on that.
Yeah.
And how quickly it was like, he literally went from promising, we'll do whatever it takes to, we might have to pay $5,000 for a lawyer. And he was like, whoa. Except for that, whoa, that's like $5,000.
And then why is getting a job like out of the question? You're in debt and you owe $5,000. Get a freaking job.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the conspiracy theory that goes with this, right? Is he didn't really quit his job to do with – he retired. And he was trying to get an early retirement. And he's like, well, no, I'm retired. I'm not going to go back to work. That's dumb. Yeah. Like, I'm retired, right? And so that's – what upsets him about it. And, you know, the fact that now not only does he have to pay for this lawyer, he would have to pay for this lawyer who was trolling him and the only reason they have to do it is because he failed at what he tried to do.
Right.
Like, and so it's just, it's all over the place. And like, I mean, go backwards. Like the funny part, like, the sex schedule thing.
Oh gosh. Uh-huh.
It's also like, that's also not how it works. Like if you're doing it twice a day, you might be able to finish twice a day, you know, for 6 days, especially when you have the help of the blue pills.
Right.
But like for days 4, 5, and 6, I mean, shooting blanks. Like there's nothing there. Like it's not helping your chances. Like,
yeah. I think I've read somewhere that you're supposed to just like
store
2 days.
It. Like 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's you need to have. Yeah.
Yeah. You need max power going in there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you need it takes time to make the things. It takes time to get things all for your body to get things all in a row because it's not, you can't just like, you know, there's got to be sperm. That's what happens.
Right. That was my impression as well, but.
Yeah. So, all right. So, speaking of. Same subject. Kids back in their home country. That brings us to Ashley and Manuel. So Ashley and Manuel are now locked in the car. They're leaving the park or wherever they met with, to talk with Ashley's mom and sister. And they're going to go home. And she says, like, immediately, we need to talk about your kids. Expect, like, I just feel like you're hiding something from me. So she says they've been married for a year and there's been zero progress with her connecting to the kids. She thought it was going to be a priority. It should have been a priority for him before they got married. And he just says, like, yeah, but it just never came up. We didn't have opportunity. So she tells him that from her perspective, it seems like he's hiding something about his kids or about his ex or something about his life in Ecuador. And says, but you know what? I'm going to give you a chance to explain yourself more clearly. Now, he says that the kids know that he's married and he'll start – you know, greasing the wheels with getting them ready to meet their stepmom. So they're 12 and 14, and he tells us, not Ashley, mind you, he tells us in an interview that they had a really hard time with him moving to the U.S., and they're still kind of struggling with that, and he wanted to give them more time to adjust to that before he, you know, added something else to the plate that would be hard to adjust to. Again, Ashley didn't get that explanation. he just tells us he's just trying to do what's best for them and he wants her support in that. But to Ashley, like, she gets none of that and she's just confused because she thinks they're in a repetitive cycle. And at this point, she puts on a pretty condescending tone, and which makes him get defensive. And he just goes into his kind of standard response of, like, well, it's my private life and you, whatever, I'll deal with it. You don't have to worry about it. I don't know how you're worrying about it. Also, I don't have to tell you anything. So, but if you did want to know something, you have to ask specifically. And she is always annoyed by that. She's like, how am I supposed to know what to ask if I don't know anything? Like, they're supposed to, like, guess, do you have a kid? Blink twice if you have a kid. Do you have one kid? No. Do you have two kids? Like, how are we supposed to do this? So anyway. But – and that's even worse because he says that definitely can't be it anyway, because when I do ask you a bunch of questions, you get mad at that too. So she thinks he's just deflecting, which he deflects by then just being like, don't worry about it. I'll handle it. So again, she comes back to, see, this whole thing makes me think like you're hiding something, which he says he's not. And then they have to stop because she's going to start ugly crying in the car. Yeah, it this thing, she says, I'm your wife. This thing where you think you have a private life that's separate from me doesn't really work. So they finally get home and they're both really mad. And I thought they were just going to go in and have sex, but they did not. She says she needs space outside. So she hangs out a little bit with Rico Suave, which is their dog. So now after this fight, she's more convinced than ever that he's hiding something. And now she's going to pry into his past. All right, so... What's the less effective way of dealing with the end of this argument? Vowing that you're going to pry into your partner's past, or just banging it out like they would have done otherwise?
I don't know. I mean, they're both not great, but at least, I don't know, banging it out seems more like what's worked for them.
I don't see how prying into the past is going to do anything but piss him off and make things worse. Right.
Piss him off. I don't think she's ever going to find what it is. Because the problem is you don't know what you're looking for. Right. So how is it that you're not going to find something that's going to upset you? Because if you find nothing, you're going to keep looking. You're going to keep looking until you find something that upsets you. It just seems like a terrible strategy.
Right. I mean, because sometimes it's just like your thought process makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so it must be something else, and not like your thought process makes no sense to me. You must be a very different person than me, right?
Yeah.
Like there must be some way, something in the way your mind is processing this that is different than the way I would process it. Instead of, nope, everyone thinks like me. So if it doesn't make sense to me, I'm missing a piece of the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's kind of where she's at. But it sounds like she's going to go this private investigator like they brought up last time. And again, this show has more The reality shows have more damn private investigators than I've ever heard of in my life. Like, how many people are out here hiring private investigators?
It's always the moms that, like, want this to happen, right? You got, like, Chantel's mom. Yes, you got Ashley's mom. All these moms, like, you know, trying to hire PIs. Hire a private
investigator. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know. I don't even know if that's a real job. I just thought it was a TV job. It was like...
Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, and we talked about this last week a little bit, I think the way to frame this where Ashley could kind of get her way is just be like, what, I'm bad news? Like, why it can't this be a joyous thing to tell your kids? And frame it from that. Like, they should be excited about me.
And the kids already know, according to him, right? And so... That seems like weird, because if I was a kid, I would also be like, why have we not met the person you're married to? That's weird, Dad. Like, that seems like I got married to who? Like, that is she, I was going to say, is she a witch? And I was like, actually, yes, she is a witch. Let's, but it's like, it's like that would stress me out more, is some unknown person out there that my dad is already married to, that I know I'm going to have to meet eventually. That seems like harder to process than actually meeting the person and learning about them and maybe finding out they're not so scary, because if you anything you don't know, you tend to make nightmare scenarios in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what a terrible, horrible beast that he's married might be one of those things that's stressing him out.
Yeah. Just this couple, like same old, same old.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We were introduced to a new couple this week. So out of the group we saw, who was your student of the week?
Boy, I didn't think she was that great. But then I was like, well, maybe there was a better choice. And no, there wasn't. So I said Emily.
Me too. I did too.
Specifically for the part where she was like, where it seemed like Kobe was starting to get defensive when she was describing the differences. They're like, well, you know, it's just like when I came to America. And she was like, yes, it was. We're learning and we're adjusting. It's like, I'm not accusing you or your country of being awful. I'm just, it's just different. Right.
She's just trying to understand the situation. Yeah. Sure. Right. Yeah, I went with Emily as well. Okay, what about your dunce?
Oh, I said Gino. Like, the being so arrogant about the visa that you messed up. And, like, I don't know. To me, as a probably more involved parent than maybe Jasmine is, or actually, as we talked about, we've never seen her in mom mode or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, if my partner made it so that I couldn't see my kids for another 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm ever forgiving him for that.
Yeah. Like, and let's also say that it's been a year, I think, at this point since she's been in the country.
Yeah. And that's the going back is one thing. But it wouldn't even be like an argument or like a fight. It would just be like,
nope, see ya, bye.
See ya, bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of figured you would go Gino. So I actually went Nicole. I definitely got trolling vibes from her as well. It's like, you don't have to culture shock Mahmood immediately when he steps foot into this country. You know, there's ways that you could help him ease into things. And like she keeps on saying, her goal is for him to like it there. He is not going to like it there if she keeps on showing him the extreme side of, you know, like what he's used to.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's like, is it next time you'd be like, oh, you wanted to see people? Well, let's go look to the prostitutes on the corner. There's people. Oh, like, what are you doing? Why? Like, you know, it's like the most, you're right, the most extreme. You're not trying to, you're not even selling America as a place he's going to like. You're selling America as a place kind of to be like, you see what I'm used to? And then you're trying to do this, bring this Egypt stuff to me. Mm-hmm. This is what I have. And it's like, it's about winning the argument and not about making it a sustainable life living situation.
Right. How about your life lesson?
So I said lawyers at first, but it's pretty much every professional. Mm-hmm. I have never seen a professional in any circumstance that doesn't absolutely love it when you come in having fucked up at their job.
Yeah.
Like, lawyers, plumbers love that shit. Oh, you tried to fix your own toilet, did you? Oh, you thought you could do your own sink? Oh, and now who are you calling? Okay, I see how that goes.
That's so funny because that was generally along the same lines as my life lesson. I was going to say, know when to call a professional, you know, like, especially, you know, like your example with home improvement stuff. I will always look up how to do something. And I will evaluate, can I realistically do this myself? How much time, effort, and money am I going to have to put into figuring out how to do this myself? And I am perfectly fine with spending a little bit more to have it professionally done so I don't have to worry about, you know, it just feels like everything goes wrong when you try to do it yourself.
It sure does.
You know, you always have to redo something.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a good chance. Not a good chance, but there's always a chance there's something you didn't know about that you didn't forget about. And they're like, yeah 3 weeks later it breaks. And you're like, yeah, because you didn't do this thing you're supposed to do. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So we're just getting started with this season. Yeah. So it's episode we two. Will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the other sideshows have kind of wrapped up. Like, I think Single Life is wrapped up.
Yeah, they just had the tell all for Single Life.
Yeah, Diaries hasn't been on for a while. Yeah,
I want to say they're going to come back with a Love in Paradise.
Oh gosh, you know season. What though? What was interesting? I saw the lineup for that. The Love in Paradise. They're not all from the Caribbean this time, because before it was like they were all kind of located in one little area, so it's like island, you know. And now it's just
they changed the name of the show, like right at the literally the day before it aired.
It
was supposed to be Caribbean Love, and they changed it to like Love in Paradise something or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know what officially it's called, but that's the one that is coming up. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I read the profiles of them. It seems very low priority to me. Maybe I'll get around to watching it. Maybe I won't.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. So we will be back this time next week. We will be back this time next week.
Okay.
We have to talk about our schedules, but I'm pretty sure it'll work. All right. So until then.
All right. See everybody then.
Okay. Bye. Okay,
bye. Good.